Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/tripcast. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Texas Talking. What was that you said?
Texas Talking.
Gonna hoop up inside your head.
Texas Talking.
This is Texas State Senator Brian Birdwell welcoming you to this week's Tribcast. I'm headed off to the gun range to exercise my Second Amendment rights, so let's turn it over to Reeve Hamilton and the team so they can exercise their First Amendment rights. Reeve?
Thank you, Senator. This is Reeve Hamilton here with the Tribcast for the second week of May. Joining me is Executive Editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
Reporter Jay Root.
Is this thing on?
Your microphone?
I'm kidding.
Are you acting like we're not a professional operation here?
He's proving
we are.
He's actually proving.
Yeah.
And reporter Becca Aronson is also here.
Hey there.
Hey.
Hey.
Thanks for coming.
You're welcome.
Your microphone's on too.
Yes.
We are going to get started by talking about the legislature for once. It's a big change. I think there are only 2.5 weeks left, three weeks left.
Right.
And things are starting to die. Ross will tell us that they're not dead until they're dead, but Becca, I think you reported on something that might be on its last legs here recently.
Yeah, the alternative to Medicaid expansion is pretty much a goner at this point. Zerwas's bill, which was the Texas solution, which said, you know, we
Who's
want...
Who's Zerwas?
Oh, John Zerwas in the House.
Where's he from?
He's from Symington.
What
he's
party is he in?
Reeve has rules here.
Whoops. Well, so he
they're only occasionally applied, which is much like the legislature.
I just figure everybody knows these things at this point. But so his bill to, you know, kind of create a private market solution to expand healthcare coverage to people that would have qualified for Medicaid expansion, not actually an expansion of Medicaid, is pretty much dead because it didn't make it through the House this week. So the only alternative that's left is including a rider in the budget, and you know, Perry can line item veto those things. So,
well, he can't line item veto a rider, but they can vote. Oh, they can vote against. Some of the conservatives told you they'd vote against the budget if it was in there, right?
Yeah. So Van Taylor and some of the conservative faction of the House said that they would vote against the budget in general and be willing to go into a special session if such a rider was included.
But and it Van seems Taylor like says Senate. We never say his name on this podcast.
Well, we just said it three
Van
times.
Taylor.
Van
yeah.
Taylor. Also a Republican.
From Plano.
From Plano. but, you know, I also spoke with David Simpson, another Republican with associations with the Tea Party, and he said he'd be willing to think about it because he doesn't really know what the writer does. I think that there's a lot of misinformation out there about what Zerwas's bill was and what the writer would do, because, honestly, it wouldn't expand Medicaid. It would just say, if we enter negotiations to get this money from the feds, which they want to use to expand Medicaid, we want to use it to do all these other things. We want to set up health savings accounts. We want to subsidize private insurance. It's a lot
but is
different.
It something that someone in a campaign ad could sort of fudge and say it was Medicaid expansion?
Yeah. I mean, public perception is that this is Medicaid expansion. So, you know.
Well, and it's politically poisonous in Republican primaries. I mean, the governor's resistance to this. And if you look at other states and what people are doing, the thing that has knocked this down is if you ask Republican voters about anything that looks like it supports Obamacare, they're just violently against it. And so the Republicans are, I mean, they're reacting to the people who elected them.
If you step back from it just a little bit, though, it's still pretty extraordinary that we're leaving $100 billion on the table. I mean, you know, you can say Medicaid's messed up. There are strings attached, but it's still a pretty extraordinary thing. And in Florida, although I think there was some question, did Florida, were
Florida's
they?
Florida's not, I mean, the legislature didn't approve.
The legislature didn't do
there,
it,
so.
Although the governor said that they should do it.
Mm-hmm.
But Perry was the only one, really, of the big states that just stuck all the way through and just said, we're not going to do this, and
right.
Period, and drew
He's
a line
He's held a really
in the
hard
sand.
Line on this. Compared
yeah,
it's
to really,
one of the,
really
of
did.
The
yeah.
political yeah. argument is very clear on the Republican side against it. The business argument, as you say, is really simple. It's like you can put $100 billion into your medical economy. You want to?
Well, the right? Texas Association of Business has come out in favor of the Zerwas alternative plan.
Right.
I mean, you have very conservative groups saying, we want this. You have the hospitals, you have the trade associations in healthcare, you have the business groups, because they're going to have to pay millions of dollars in penalties if we don't cover this population as a state.
But Ross is very quick to remind us that there are zombies all over the legislature, and that something is definitely dead until Sine die. But are we getting to a point where we can say this is definitely dead?
No, half the stories that we write, I mean, you guys know this, half the stories you write in the last 2 or 3 weeks of a legislature, I thought that was dead and it came back, it popped up. You know, if it's really important to somebody and if they have any juice at all, they're going to keep plugging until the door closes. And there are a bunch of people pushing this thing, a bunch of people who really want this thing to get in, and they're still looking for ways to do it. The chances are very, very slim. And, you know, Zerwas himself is saying, you know, it doesn't look very good. But he did not say, I have stopped trying. And he didn't say, I'm giving up.
He's not totally dismissed.
It's in a coma. It's in a coma. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
It looks really bad. It's green around the gills, however you want to say it.
Yeah.
The writer's the most likely place for it.
Right.
But, I mean, that's because Zerwas has said, you know, it doesn't really work as an amendment to put on a Christmas tree bill because it would basically kill any legislation you put it on.
On a Christmas tree bill, you want to die. It works just fine.
Yeah, but I mean, if you put this on one of, like, Nelson's big omnibus Medicaid bills, like SB 7 or 8, then, I mean, you threaten to kill that legislation.
Who's Nelson?
Jane Nelson from the Senate. Also Republican from Flower Mound.
Nice. But what about, Jay, what about double dipping?
Double dipping.
I believe you said that is dead.
Well, the bill to ban double dipping by Representative Chris Turner, D. Grand Prairie.
It's his bill. It's not his double dipping.
His bill would ban double dipping by longtime state elected officials.
Such as
Rick Perry. Texas. That? That bill is dead. Now, is the idea to ban it dead? No. There are definitely multiple opportunities, or will be multiple opportunities, to amend bills that would include some sort of ban on this practice. What was interesting, though, I thought, was that Bill Caligari,
Katie.
Right.
More or less the same thing.
The chairman of the Pensions Committee, House Pensions Committee, said that there was no support on the committee to do this, which I think is kind of extraordinary in a way to say that we can't get support to put a ban on longtime elected officials drawing a pension at the same time they're working in the same job that they always had, and then they're just getting pension for that.
You're getting a pension payment while you're still drawing a salary.
Right, same exact job without ever having retired.
Right.
And for it to be controversial or unpopular to ban that kind of activity is kind of an extraordinary statement, I think.
And this is not quite the legislature doing something that would regulate themselves, but it would regulate their colleagues.
Legislator can avail themselves of this benefit if they reach the level, if they're able to retire as a state employee. Now, if you're a legislator and your salary is and always has been $7,200 from the state, it's not a very good benefit. But for teachers who have enough credit and can transfer those credits into the state employee system, for people who used to work for the state. For example, Lon Burnham was told by the employee retirement system that he qualified for the same exact kind of annuity, not at the same amount that Perry had, but he had worked as a state employee before he became a legislator, and he had a salary that was higher than $7,200. And so he had a benefit that he could qualify for, and he said it would make his life better to have that extra income, but he decided not to do that.
And Perry's is a fat pension because he's been a statewide elected official with a full salary for 22 years, right?
Right, so, exactly. Plus, he was able to buy certain credits military and all of that. I mean, he increased his take-home pay on a gross basis by $92,000. And the Democrats' Lone Star Project put out a report saying that because of that, he was the highest paid governor in the United States, and they cited these figures that were done by some California group, and it's pretty interesting that Rick Perry, you know, fiscal conservative, under their calculation, would be the highest paid governor in the
nation. He says that he's basically just maximizing the things that are available to him.
Right. I mean, he said that he would be crazy not to take a benefit that's available to him, and you know, from a pure financial standpoint, he's right. I mean, why would you turn down free money like this?
Yeah,
and
90 grand.
There's really no downside for him because you increase the amount of money you take home, and then you don't give up anything. You get to continue to add to your annuity, and then when you retire, when he does finally retire one of these days, he'll be able to add the years that he served after he began first taking that benefit. So there's really no downside at all for him.
So what are the avenues if Turner's bill is dead? What are the avenues to actually change
this practice?
Well,
there's some pension bills out there that are floating around. So
that's kind of what everybody's doing right now, is if you've got something that, you know, the actual bill died, all that died really was the bill number, and
right.
You can take the content and try to attach it to something else that's still moving around. All the Senate bills are still alive. So
well,
they're all
like
kind of running around looking for vehicles.
But it's like, you know, guns on campus or campus carry.
Right.
Everyone sort of said, oh, it's dead in the Senate. But then the House passed it. And it's only dead in the Senate because Senator John Whitmire, Democrat of Houston, refused to let it pass out of his committee. But if Dewhurst opts to refer it to a different committee, it might be alive again.
Right.
But they have to suspend, though, I'm told. Is that right? I believe they have to suspend to bring that bill up. So are there going to be – I mean, how are they going to get the 21 votes?
Right. Well, you know, the fastest way to get around that would be to find something else and use this, you know, find a way to put campus carry on as an amendment that doesn't have to go through the committee process or through that approval process. Get it to the floor as an amendment and hook it to a bill. That's a simple majority vote.
That doesn't need.
Well, it's gotten out of the Senate before. And the Senate hasn't gotten, less pro Second Amendment in the last few years.
Right. The rules are complex, and there's a million ways to sort of get a Hail Mary pass done. And you know, that's what the last two or three weeks are about. You know, try this.
Yeah, I mean, this is really the time to pay attention. It's like a basketball game, you know, in the last 2 minutes, or, you know, it's all you need to know. I mean, and this is really when things start happening.
Yeah, there are some things, you know, like, as you guys know, and there are some things where the authors have said, well, I gave that a shot, I've given up, we're not going forward with it. There are some things like that, and those are probably really and truly dead. But I had a question about the pension thing. So did they talk seriously about if you're not going to outlaw this, at least disclose it?
Well, no, not really. That was talked about seriously a few months ago at the beginning of the session, and that appears to be dead. I mean, Donna Howard never got a hearing on her bill to do that.
So she would have allowed it to continue. You just got to say you're doing it.
I mean, right now, if I had to – yeah, exactly. She just did not have a bill to ban it. But, yeah, her bill said you would have to disclose it. And I believe there might be another avenue at somebody trying to require disclosure as well. But if I had to predict right now, I would say that this session is going – that at the end of this session, the legislature will give its blessing to double-dipping by longtime elected officials and secrecy of it, that you will never know who's doing it. And we know about Perry because Perry ran for president and he had to disclose it to the Federal Election Commission, but you don't have to disclose it to the Texas Ethics Commission. So
maybe they'll just
we don't
require
know who
that everyone
it.
Has to run for president at some point.
Well, you know,
to work around.
Or Congress, or if you run for Congress or if you run for the U.S. Senate, you also would have to disclose that.
Yeah, federal disclosure laws are much tighter than Texas disclosure laws.
Well, we should probably take a moment here to disclose that we are sponsored by Audible.com, and you can go there and get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial if you go to audibletrial.com/tribcast, and that's the only way to go in a way that benefits us, so please use that
please click.
Link. And I looked up on my iPhone to see
Van
what audiobooks
Taylor, would you
I
please
have.
Click?
Right. Yeah. You can. I recommend Malcolm Gladwell's book, What the Dog Saw, of essays, because that's good for short trips, because they're each just like, each chapter is standalone.
You don't have to sit in your driveway very long to listen to the end.
Right.
Right.
So go there, audibletrial.com/tribcast. Since we were talking about campus carry, I thought we would just quickly touch on sort of the latest higher ed news of the week, which came out of South Texas, where, as we've discussed on the Tribcast before.
You suggesting gunplay?
No. There is some conflict. We've talked about the plans to merge UT Brownsville and UT Pan American and create this new university down there that sort of spans the region and includes a medical school, and that's had universal support, a unified front from the delegation, which is known for not being that unified, and that's been going fine until this week. Suddenly, it's sort of contentious. Everyone still agrees that they want the bill to pass and that they want this new university, but Senator Hinojosa added new language to the bill to, in the previous versions, that everyone has voted for except for Senator Schwertner, mm-hmm. which, pop quiz, fill in the rest of his information.
Republican from Georgetown.
Thank you.
Charles.
I was going to say Round Rock, somewhere
He's
up there.
He's also a doctor.
Also a doctor, yes.
One of three in the Senate.
So everyone's voted for the original plan, which was to have an advisory committee put together by the University of Texas system to decide where the medical school goes, because everyone down there wants the medical school in their area, because it's good for business and health. So Senator Hinojosa came in and got rid of that advisory committee and said, we are going to say right now that the medical school, half of it will be in Hidalgo County, which is his area, and the other half will be in Cameron County. And the Cameron County people got very, very upset. A lot of them drove up to testify.
They wanted a winner-take-all?
They say what they wanted is the flexibility for the system to do what they thought was best to get the best med school based on what the national experts on this panel said. I'm sure that they might secretly hope that the national experts would conclude that because they already have the regional academic health center based in their county, that it's, most of it should go there. But
they were willing.
That's not their line.
They were willing to give up halfsies and risk all of it going to Hidalgo?
I guess.
Really?
I mean, it's hard, really? It's hard to imagine that all of it would go to Hidalgo just because the RAC, the Regional Academic Health Center, right. has been growing in Harlingen for so many years. But yeah, I mean, essentially, yes, they were willing to leave it up to this panel. And then you saw, you know, because there's some lingering tension with the UT system, not because of their current governance issues, but going back to getting them to make this investment in the RAC in South Texas, which some of the senators, like Senator West, were in the Senate for that fight. You know, they don't. There's some distrust of the UT system's judgment on this, and the law. Some lawmakers feel like they need legislative direction.
Well, early in this fight, the Hidalgo guys, I guess Hinojosa and some of the others went to Texas A&M. And use Texas A&M's interest in doing this as a spur to UT, right?
Right. Well, and that's what they said today. The CEO of one of the biggest hospital down there said, look, if this bill doesn't go, we will still find a way to build this medical school. Well, we don't know what the vehicle will be, but there's options out there, and we'll find a way. But it's just, you know, there are only a few weeks left, as we said previously, and for this not to pass would be a big embarrassment to the Valley and the governor who has supported it.
Has it been approved by either chamber? Or?
There are two bills, and both they sort of crossed over. The Senate passed the Senate bill. The House passed the House bill. Now the Senate committee has passed the House bill, but now it's different from the Senate bill, which is in the House committee.
So they're going to have
and
to
so
conference.
They might have to go to conference. And the concerns are that if they can't get this worked out by the time they get to conference or in conference, that the bill could be at risk, when it looked like sort of a sure thing going into the session.
But that's how everything sets up at the end of a session. Right. It's like, you know, nothing happens except on deadline, right? And here we are with the deadlines. They've got, you know, a bunch of trains running on the budget fight, which sort of relates to this in a way. But, you know, there's a faction in the legislature that doesn't want to use rainy day fund money. There's a faction in the legislature that doesn't want to break the spending limit set in the Constitution for growth in the state budget. The House yesterday voted out a big tax bill that cost $667 million that weighs against the budget. They still haven't funded the water program for about $2 billion. There are people scratching around for $2 to $3.5 billion for transportation, and there's a bunch of people looking for $800 million for public education. So you have a math problem, and they're going to go into conference committee on the budget with all of these other problems, and then they're going to throw in things like Medicaid expansion
Medicaid
and all of that.
Too.
And the question is, do you throw all of that in one package and move it out to the floor? Can you find 100 votes for any combination of these things? And that's how these end games all work.
Right.
We've got a deadline.
So
we've got all of these components.
There's going to be a
special
session.
there'll be a moment when the wheels will just be rolling down the south steps, and
will be weeping, and
everybody's going to say it's a special session. It's sure. And then a few hours later, wait, the wheels are back on. So there's really no way to tell. I mean, if it's going to fall apart. I mean, these things, it's always like that toward the end.
Yeah, it's a roller coaster until the end.
Well, and the other component, you know, when you start all of this and when you get onto the calendar with all the red squares and deadlines and everything, and you've got all these things up in the air, there is always a, well, when do you think the special session will be? And we're already hearing those conversations about, you know, there's always been a conversation about a special session probably sometime next year on school finance because that's in the courts. There's been a conversation about whether or not they would have a special session later this year on redistricting, depending on what the U.S. Supreme Court does with the Voting Rights Act. But now we're talking about the possibility, because of all these deadlines and everything, of a special session on budget or water or some of this stuff.
Well, Perry, Rick Perry, our Texas.
Texas?
Our Haskell, right?
Has said today, again, if there's no tax cut, and there's no and or no water bill, you know, $2 billion or a lot of money for water infrastructure, we're definitely coming back. Right. I mean, it's just a no-brainer for him. And you know, he's got a new grandkid coming in June. He's going to be here anyway. I just sense that Perry will call the legislature back if his really big items are not in there.
Right. And that's always been the way he is. He's just sort of, you know, I've set these two things or three things or seven things up, and we're going to do it. And he's never been reluctant to call them back when they didn't.
Well, let's talk about one thing that maybe he might feel like calling back, which is his demand that the UIL investigate this religious gesture at this track meet. Can you bring us up to date on that?
Well, I'm not sure that he would call it back. But basically what happened was that, I guess it was a couple of weeks ago, there was a track meet in South Texas. I think it was Kingsville, Columbus High School student, after they won the race, made some gesture and was disqualified. He was disqualified for it. The UIL has very strict rules on any kind of celebratory gestures or display of emotion after a race. So the guy's father said that it was a religious display, that he was pointing toward the heavens and thanking God for being able to win this race. It sparked a fairly immediate outcry after this father was quoted.
I think he was thanking God for smiting the other teams.
and so there was Greg Abbott tweeted about it and said this was outrageous. And then last Friday, Rick Perry sent out a letter to the UIL and said that he wanted an immediate investigation, get to the bottom of this, that he would not tolerate any discrimination against anybody for, you know, expressing their religion. And the UIL said, wait a minute, you know, this was unsporting conduct of an athlete. We have very strict rules on this. And they looked more, you know, looked at it in detail. And actually, the father came out, I believe, on Monday and said, we recognize this was not a religious display.
They completely disowned it, right?
They totally disowned it, totally backed down. The student himself, well, the investigation, if you want to call it that.
It took like a day.
I'm guessing that somebody saw a video. I'm guessing that somebody saw a video. Well, I think
Well, according to accounts, he raised his hands at some point, and he was warned that that could be considered unsportsmanlike, and then he got very disrespectful with the referee or whatever it is that was telling him, like, calm down. And that's when he was disqualified.
Well, and the kid issued a statement too, right?
The kid basically disowned it too and said, I'm sorry, it was my fault. I shouldn't have done this.
What did he do? Do we know for sure?
Well, don't.
I heard a bunch of variations on
it. Yeah, we don't really know. I mean, you know, really all we had to go on, and we made it very clear in that story on Friday that it was according to the father. The father was the only one that
and the son.
Well, no, but the son was the son. Right.
And the other
see
guy,
where this
the
is
Holy
going.
Ghost. Right. I got it. No, but the father in all of the news reports was the source for saying that this was a religious display. So we made it very clear that it was according to the father who said this, and then Rick Perry, you know, based on that, called for an investigation. What I don't think that I think, you know, just knowing the governor, I would imagine that he would say, look, we had a report, we took it seriously, we called for an investigation, it's all been cleared up, everybody goes home happy.
Move along, no story here.
Yeah.
Doesn't this
move along, shiny object.
There's sort of like this is not something he needs to be getting involved in sports. I mean, high school athletics, right? I mean,
no, this is a classic thing that people get involved in. This is the cheerleaders in East Texas when, you know, had the religious sign. I mean, these guys, you know, this is, you're running to a headline. This is classic politics. It's populism.
And they just have a hair trigger for these types of things. Anytime this was a very good example of that hair trigger of, you know, any sort of insinuation that somebody's religious expression has been abridged is an opportunity, a great opportunity for a politician to jump in and say, we're not going to let this happen.
It's why politicians show up at protests from, you know, politicians of all stripes. They're just, you know,
but if
run to the scene of an outrage.
Guns, right? I mean, you know, that's where, you know, look at the
germs and steel.
Look at the gun debate. I mean, you know, that how many people sent out press releases on this? The Republicans saying, see, we did something for guns and for people for their gun rights. I mean,
even if it had been a religious expression, if the rules prohibit putting your hands up after a race, he still broke them. It doesn't matter if it was a religious expression or not. That's right.
I think you're ignoring politics.
The
politics of this are pretty simple. As you know, if you're going to stand for, you know, we think you should be able to express yourself however you want, and these people stopped you, then
okay.
I think politics are ignoring logic.
I want you to think about this. What if he had made the sign of the cross? And then was disqualified for that. Now, right. That would have been... Ted Cruz would have left the U.S. Senate and taken Kingsville.
That's exactly right. And that's what the people that support them, in some measure, want them to do. Or they wouldn't do it. I mean, this is a responsive business.
That'd be taxpayer money on that jet. We're really uncovering other very serious hypothetical problems in the system.
We're making up all kinds of good stuff.
Well, while we have a few minutes left, why don't we just quickly touch on President Obama's visit to Austin? What brings him here?
It's jobs. Tech and jobs and, you know, he's just making the run. I guess he's on his way to Mexico, right?
It's a training program. Well, I'm not sure where he's going after this, but it's a training program that he's touting here, isn't it?
Right. Maynor High School.
Yeah. Just
a little east of Austin.
Training.
Right.
Yeah. That's a really interesting high school, actually. I've gone out there.
Yeah, tell us about it.
Oh, it's just, the teachers are very passionate. It's just sort of very heavy on the technical education, which is becoming a sort of a big buzz, not word, but a sort of theme of we need students that are starting to get actual jobs that the workforce needs, not these liberal arts majors. And
they were talking that
we need
that
engineers.
A lot in the Senate this week with the passage of the committee sub for HB5.
Right.
You know, they were saying, you know, we want to have a career track so that students who want to go into certain fields have a place to start in high school rather than just sending them off for college prep when maybe that's not the right path for everyone.
And some of these, I mean, I think the kids at Maynor, a lot of them will go on to, like, very advanced engineering that is, you know, sort of advanced college. But mm-hmm. Even that, sort of, we are trying to funnel as many kids into that as possible because that's really what the workforce needs. But it also needs people to go to technical schools and community colleges and learn how to weld, you know.
Right, right.
It's interesting, though, that, you know, Barack Obama is coming to Texas to talk about the economy. And Rick Perry's always talking about the economy. And today, when we saw Perry on the south steps of the Capitol, he was talking about the fact that, you know, this is a great place for Barack Obama to come. And now I assume that they have different ideas about what makes the economy great. But it was an interesting moment where, you know, they were both, you know, you have Perry talking about the economy and Barack Obama talking about the economy in both cases in Texas. Perry also said that he would greet Obama on the tarmac and didn't know whether or not he would have more time to meet with him. I'm guessing not. But the other aspect to this that I think is interesting is that it comes as the Democrats have launched this Battleground Texas plan to sort of make Texas, if not blue one day, purple, you know.
Make it a battleground. Sort of in the name.
Right, yeah. Perry was asked about that, and he said, of course, predictably, that Texas was a red state and would always be a red state. But
Any chance that Obama's coming here in response to Steve Hotze's press conference about his lawsuit?
Highly unlikely.
Can someone explain what that was really quickly?
So Steve Hotze is a doctor, a physician in Houston, and he filed a lawsuit this week to challenge the constitutionality of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, which may sound familiar as the Supreme Court already weighed in on this. But he presented a lawsuit that basically says because the Supreme Court said that the ACA is a tax and that penalties are paying a tax if they don't provide employer insurance, that it has to follow the origination clause in the U.S. Constitution, which says as a revenue-raising bill, it must have originated in the House. And technically, it started off as a tax credit bill in the House, not a revenue-raising bill, and it was subbed out in the Senate, the U.S. Senate. So technically, maybe he's right. A court will have to decide that. He also made a second argument that it might violate the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution because it's requiring employers to pay insurance companies for health plans, a.k.a. one individual to another individual, whereas we're really only allowed to be forced to pay the government.
That's Fifth Amendment? I thought the Fifth Amendment was to the right to not incriminate yourself.
Right.
Maybe I got it wrong.
It's if it's not one of the amendments that Senator Birdwell listed in our intro, we really don't know what it does.
It's not impossible. It's hard to imagine that the people who challenged Obamacare in the first place didn't run all the big traps like that, you know, the origination clause and, you know,
it never came up in the original suit. So. Right.
So, you know.
It may be a violation of the Second Amendment around here in Texas. I could see somebody making that.
I mean, he just wants to get the law overturned in Texas.
But it did give the lieutenant governor a chance to get his name on the effort.
Well, that was
politics.
But then
he didn't show up to the press conference.
Right?
He put his name all over the presser, but then he wasn't actually there.
It's a busy time.
It's
the end of bills are dying left and right. All right. On behalf of Jay, Becca, Ross, and Todd, I would like to tell you to send any questions and comments to tribcast@texastribune.org and to go to audibletrial.com/tribcast to get your free audiobook and to go on iTunes and rate us there highly. And we should also give a shout out to Shiny Ribs, who does our theme music, and you can catch him at the ACL Festival this fall and his band, Shiny Ribs. Anyway, I'm Reeve. Thanks for listening.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Texas talking. Yes, sir. Testing 1, 2, 3, the golden voice of radio and the podcast. Excuse me.